This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back, Carol and Mike. We are in the Beacon Building, downtown Manchester on Elm Street. Beautiful, sunny day. At least it was an hour ago. And as I look up into the center part of the building, which has just this magnificent view up to the top floor because it's all open space, it looks like the sun is still out. And that's a very good thing. Today's show is brought to you in part by Belmont Hall and Restaurant on Grove Street, Manchester. You know, you've been there. You've gone to a wedding there or some kind of function. BelmontHall.net. Top quality food made fresh for over 50 years. How do you think Carol learned all about it? Also, Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and now open with drive-thru in Londonderry, RedArrowDiner.com. 107.7 The Pulse. And I got to sneeze, Carol, so you go ahead and take it from here.
Oh, goodness. Yes, Mike and I are both kind of coming down with something, but
we're going to talk here.
But I would like to welcome on our next guest, and it is Ed Fuller from Fuller's Sugar House. You can check them out on the web at fullerssugarhouse.com. And hi, Ed, all the way up from Lancaster. How are you today?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
Great. So it is the season, correct?
It is the season, although we would really wish to have some of the warmer weather you guys are having down south. We're stuck in a spring cold, and it's been a struggle so far trying to make maple syrup this spring.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. Like how, because right by now, would you have already been, you know, well into the process, or where are you at right now? Like how do things stand at this point?
Well, we're ahead of last season. Last year at this point, we had made 80 gallons of syrup. This year, we've made 360. But a typical year when sap starts running the middle of March and goes to the middle of April, typically we have 1,600 gallons of syrup in drums by the end of March. So we're a little behind. And we're a little concerned. Our forecast up here still shows fairly cool for the next week or so.
Now, when you say cool, because you're what, 3 hours away from us?
Two and a half.
And a half, 3 hours?
Yeah.
So, like, what is the temperature up there today?
It's 31 right now.
Oh.
It's sunny.
It's 72
it's
and sunny here.
Sunny. It's 31. It is melting because the sun's so warm. But we have a cool breeze. The woods themselves are colder than we are here in town.
Mm.
The trees haven't had a chance even to thaw out much this spring yet. So until we get that happening, we won't be seeing much sap.
All right, so, Ed, hi, this is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
What is the optimum daytime and nighttime temperatures so that things flow smoothly and get this process going?
Typically, we're looking for sunny days about 40, 42 during the day, cooling down at night to approximately 28 or so, not too cold, just enough to freeze, and have that fluctuation of temperature day after day after day. Gives us a really good sap run. And we're on vacuum in all of our woods. In other words, our vacuums are sucking sap out of the woods, not out of the tree, but out of the woods. So even if it doesn't freeze down solid, we still can get some sap out of the woods.
All right, so the other extreme happened 3 years ago, and I'm sure you've remembered this.
Too warm.
For about 5 days in March, we had temperatures, at least here, averaging right around 80 degrees
yes.
or above. How does that affect things
Nothing.
When it happens so early?
It's too warm. We didn't make any syrup at all during that warm spell. It did cool down a little bit after, and we did make a little more syrup, but by that point, the sap is pretty much gone beyond usefulness, and it's not very nice syrup that we make. So we really do look for that 40-28 fluctuation.
Now, for those of us out there that don't, like, I myself, I'm not quite understanding. Like, can you give, like, just a small, you know, little course in you know, what is the correct terminology, too? Do I say maple
sugaring?
Maple sugaring,
yeah, maple
right?
sugaring, yes.
Okay.
All right, so we actually have 10,269 taps, or we drill that many holes in
Whoa.
Different trees. Some trees may have two, some might have one. So we start doing that process of tapping those trees in January to be prepared for a March run.
Okay.
Our woods are all on hills and mountains, so some of that land is pretty tough. This year was extremely tough with all the snow we had. It took quite a bit longer to get ready for sugaring season.
So okay, you go out there, like, in the woods and literally tap these trees one by one, walking through the woods and doing it.
That's correct. Yep.
Wow.
That's correct. And this year, personally, I don't do it, but we have a crew that does. This year, the snow was so deep and there was no body to it, so snowshoes wouldn't work. The fellows would go out in the morning and waddle through 3 feet, 4 feet of snow.
Oh, my God.
From tree to tree, trying to get to them so we can get tapped. Typically, our guys can put in anywhere from 4 to 450 spouts a day when we're tapping. This season, they were on a good day, they were doing 275.
Oh, wow.
So that really extends the amount of time it takes to get ready. And it's hard on the guys. It's really tough work.
Sure. So it's
really
not old school where you've got a bucket hanging off the actual open tap. It's all vacuum. I mean, some people still do it that way, but
some people still do it that way with buckets.
Yeah, you could never do it with the size of and the volume that you do.
Yeah, with 10,000 buckets, I don't see us ever getting out there to empty them. And some of the mountains that we actually tap on, you're physically holding the tree with one arm and drilling it with the other arm to stay upright. It's that steep.
Oh, wow.
So there's no way, there's really not an opportunity to do buckets. And it's different than it was quite a few years ago. We're doing this as a business. We're strictly a business. So we need to make syrup, to put it in drums, so we don't have syrup to sell. So we don't have the luxury of letting things just take their time. We really need to get going and get things done. So this year has been a little bit of a struggle for us.
You've got orders, in other words, including, I know, the Red Arrow Diner.
Yes.
Is one of your clients, for folks that might want to try the syrup of Fuller Sugar House in Lancaster, talking to Ed Fuller.
Yeah.
So you've got the vacuum process, and it brings it all to what point now? What happens
next? At the bottom, with those 10,000 taps, we actually have about 60 miles worth of pipe in our woods total. So at each, we have four different woods. And at the bottom of each one of these woods, we have a big storage tank with a vacuum system that actually draws any sap that gets into our line gets pulled down to our tank. So it's important to us to make sure whatever we get to bring back here to boil. So we have four different woods that do that. We have a tanker truck that leaves here in the morning when the sap is really running hard, and he'll be gone all day. He'll go get a load, come back, get a load, come back all day long. Normally, in the middle of the season, we're bringing 16,000 gallons of sap into the store a day, into the sugar house, of which we're making anywhere from the 200 or 300 gallons of syrup a day. So a lot of it matters. The weather really matters. The sugar content of the sap matters, because there is a varying degree of sugar in the sap as it comes out of the tree, which changes once it really starts flowing. So everything matters to us as far as making syrup.
Right. So it gets down to, down to the bottom, and then it comes into the barrels. When you say they bring them back in, then what happens at that point? Is that when the boiling process starts? And
when we send the tanker truck out, when he comes back, the tanker holds 2,200 gallons of sap. He'll come back and unload into an outdoor tank, which feeds. We have reverse osmosis, which is a machine that removes about 80% of the water that's in sap. Sap is basically water with a very small amount of sugar in it. Typically, anywhere from 1.5% to 3% sugar content in sap.
Okay.
So it needs to end up at 66.9% sugar to be maple syrup. So there's a big variance there. So we're using reverse osmosis, a machine that actually separates water molecules, sugar molecules, and we keep the sugar molecules as a concentrate. And when we start to boil at the end of this concentration period, we're using 15% sap instead of that 3% sap.
So you are a scientist as well. Yeah. I'm going to call you
Dr. Ed Fuller. Bit of everything. Yeah, you've got to know a lot of different things.
Yeah. Hey, the classification of color and concentration, everything else, the grading of maple syrup has changed this year.
Yeah.
So are you happy with that? Are your fellow maple sugarers happy with the change?
Oh, we're very happy with it. We jumped on board quickly. Not only do we produce syrup here, we are a supplier of equipment to other people around us that make syrup. So we decided to be proactive and learn this new system fast. So other people coming in the door with questions, we'd have the answers to them. There are a few people who are reluctant to change, But by the end of this year, that'll be gone, and they'll have to change into the new rules. And the whole rules are done to make the complete maple industry the same. So if you walk into my store and buy a quart of amber syrup, if you happen to be in northern Maine or Quebec or Vermont or Minnesota or Ohio, when you walk in a store and you get amber, it's going to be the same exact maple syrup that I sell. Same and name, same descriptives.
Ed, is everybody on board pretty much? Are there any holdout areas or regions?
Pretty much everybody's on board. Yep. There's going to be a few people that say, I'm not doing that. But they're probably small guys that sell a little syrup out of the back, out of their sugar house. We are trying to retail and wholesale everywhere. So we really do need to be on board. We really do need to know the rules and give that same information to all our customers so they know what's going on.
And now Fuller Sugar House up in Lancaster, it is the public can go in and purchase, correct?
Absolutely. We are a retail store also.
Okay,
yes,
so
we have
for
a
those
retail
of us
store.
That...
We have a wholesale business. We have a website that does retail online sales. We do equipment sales. This time of year, especially this time of year, we love doing tours for people, especially if we're boiling. We have no problem people stopping in to talk to us.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Very fun.
Excuse me. And even in the off season, if we have visitors from away and say, can you guys do a tour? Yes, we can. We can walk you through everything. We can show you the equipment we use. We talk about how it works, how we end up with that maple syrup.
And there's a lot of other products that of course, you make. Do you take some of the unused or byproducts of the sugaring system and find other things to make with it so you don't throw so much out?
Well, the only thing we're really throwing out is water.
Okay.
Once that water is gone, then we make maple syrup. Once we make the maple syrup, now we use that same syrup to make maple candy. We use that same syrup to make maple cream and maple dry sugar.
Oh, my gosh. That's my favorite, dunked in strawberries. maple cream. Oh, my goodness.
It's one of my favorite things. I love the syrup. I love the candy, but, boy, maple cream.
How about maple brandy? I know there's a few places make that or some kind of a liqueur.
There are some liqueurs out there. Nothing that we do here. That's a whole different license. That's a whole different procedure. There are some places that make a maple beer. Again, a different license, different procedure than what we do here. There are some places that have a blend of maple syrup and other products, which we don't do. We are strictly 100% maple. If it's not 100% maple, then we don't make it.
All right.
So we do have other products in our store to sell, some hard candies that are a mixture of different sugars because maple will not make into a hard candy. And they're very tasty, but if it's not a pure 100% maple product, we're not making it here.
All right. Well, Ed, this was a very informative. I must have been absent on the field trip day of maple sugaring. But I'd love to get up there at some point. You never know.
We love visitors all the time.
Definitely. And listeners, you can check them out at fullersugarhouse.com, and you can buy gift baskets and, all kinds of stuff right online. And, and for all you restaurant owners out there, you can also get your very own labeled maple syrup for your restaurant. So, Ed, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Well, have a good day. Thank you.
Nice talking to you, Ed.
Bye-bye.
Take care. I tell you, one of the best things for me moving from the Midwest to New England was real maple syrup. Even though I'm sure it was available, where I grew up, it's just that, nobody ever bought it, at least, when you got seven kids as we did.
Right.
It was log cabin and, and
Aunt
you thought
Jemima.
That was the real Aunt Jemima, Mrs.
Butterworth.
Yeah.
They still have that, right?
Well,
the bottle?
I believe they do. Yeah.
Remember made out of her, it's like a little doll bottle. Yeah,
she was, a shapely lady, as I recall, because all she did was hold syrup all day.
Well, remember in the commercials, you'd see her talking, Mrs. Buttersworth talking. I can picture that in my head. But anyway, oh, gosh.
One of your imaginary friends. Well, anyway, if you're at the Red Arrow Diner, that's you want to have the real deal, that's where the syrup comes from, is up in Lancaster.
That's right.
And Fuller Sugar House. And I went on the maple sugaring tours maybe 10 years ago in the Monadnock region. I didn't go upstate. And it was pretty cool.
I bet it is.
Yeah, I mean, they actually had people pulling, you know, like the horses and the sleighs through the, because the snow was still down, doing it the old way, I think probably more as a demonstration than the real world.
Right.
But now the vacuum tubes make it so much easier. But boy, I'll tell you, Mother Nature can certainly throw a monkey wrench into it. And there's also, I wanted to mention to him that there's, as I'm sure he knows, there's a certain insect that hasn't really invaded New Hampshire yet, fortunately, because they have a bunch of checklist systems to keep them out. But it would kill tons of maple trees if it, yeah. They found some in Worcester, but they did a number of things. I can't explain exactly the system they used, but so far nothing spotted or no widespread of this particular beetle in New Hampshire, thank goodness.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, there's always something, you know, like with the bees and, you know, beekeepers.
Oh, colony collapse disorder,
you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to, you're listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 FM, and we are going to go on a short break. And when we come back, we are going to be joined with Holly and Nikki of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, and you are listening to 107.7 FM, WTPLFM.com, powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion, and we'll just take a couple seconds to thank our sponsors, Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room for Food for Thought and Kale & Company, and also New England Coffee, the official coffee for Food for Thought. You can check them out on the web at newenglandcoffee.com. And without any further ado, we'll welcome on our next guest. It is our regular segment each week, which, you know, is just so just educational and find out more about, you know, what you do upstairs. They're located right here in the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street. So let's welcome on Holly and Nikki from Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. So welcome to Food for Thought.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah.
We are very excited to be here.
Good. So what now, I did go up for the tour last week. My son and I went up, and maybe just tell listeners, you know, because, you know, they've been listening to us now each week, and some of them may be curious, and, you know, let people know what happens upstairs, like with the tour and what you do, and, you know, and then I'll pipe in because I was there. So
sounds good. So we have Wish Tours twice a month held at our office, and we also do take the show on the road as well. So if any businesses in the area are interested in learning more about Make-A-Wish, then we can go speak about Make-A-Wish and about our mission at other businesses in New Hampshire. But basically, we share our mission and we debunk some myths that are out there about Make-A-Wish, making sure everyone knows that it's for life-threatening medical conditions. And we share some wish stories so that folks can know about the amazing over 1,250 wishes that we've granted here in New Hampshire. And just a way for everyone to kind of put a face with the name and meet our staff and volunteers. So.
You sound so much like Julie. Do you get told that?
No, never.
No? You know, even when you called me the other day, I was like, she sounds a lot like Julie.
Perfect. I'm not Julie, but that is definitely a compliment.
So, you know, when how often do you have the tours, and where can people find out a little bit more about them?
So all of the information's on our website, which is nh.wish.org, and it's a tickler right when you go onto our website about upcoming events, and they are twice a month, and our next two are tomorrow at 12 noon and April 9th at 4 p.m. So if you're interested in attending, feel free to reach out on our website. You can RSVP right there on our website, and the email comes directly to me. So we would love to have anyone willing, because anyone that wants to learn more about Make-A-Wish, we want to get all of the facts out there so that everyone can hear and be just as excited and passionate about it as we are.
And it's quick, too, listeners. You know, it's about 45 minutes to an hour, and they start you know, in their conference room, and you know, and then you kind of walk through and you hear different stories from the Wish Kids, from somebody giving the story of the Wish Kid. And yeah. Have you ever had any experience with Make-A-Wish, Mike? Or
more on the fundraising end of it. I've been involved with a number of things that have benefited the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And certainly it's not hard to get connected or get enthusiastic about it, because, you know, it's one of those really pure organizations where you can see the smiles and see the happiness of the kids. And I'm thinking of one of the promotions that happens every summer on the water with Jason and Jason. I forget what it's called, but it's
called Rafting for Wishes.
Rafting for Wishes.
Yes.
And so I've had them on my show at a past radio station, and it's so great to talk to those guys. They have so much fun. They started out, as you know, in the river, Merrimack River, doing a 24-hour raft float.
I don't know anything about this.
Oh.
Yeah, so it takes place in Meredith Bay now. And this year, we're actually really focusing on our Wish families and our Wish kids. So we're hoping that a lot of the radio interviews and everything, we can have Wish families on there talking about the excitement of it all. And it's actually turned into 44 hours now. And so
it has?
Yeah.
Do they know this yet?
Yes, they do. It was 44 hours last year.
Yeah. So what do? They're on the water.
So they stay on the water for 44 hours, and we have teams from throughout the area that anywhere from 10 to 12 people, and they can have a raft, and they are basically throughout the year raising money for Make-A-Wish and raising awareness, and then they raft for 44 hours to help grant wishes.
Like overnight?
Yeah, with the hopes that someone stays on the raft for the entire 44 hours.
There's other people out there too, right, that are
also
part of it?
Yeah, there's a bunch of teams. Our goal, I believe, is to get between 10 and 15 teams this year.
Sure.
So
it's only
a lot of fun.
Maybe 4 or 5 years, not a real long so far. But I remember the first year, because I used to work at 500 Commercial right downtown near Arms Park, where the actual first one happened. And I used to get into work at 4 o'clock. So I went to see the guys one morning as I was getting into work. And I was standing there, and all of a sudden the darn sprinklers start going off. I'm soaked going into the radio station. But it was everybody's in a really upbeat spirit, and it's fun, you know. And you have to be creative in the world of not-for-profit, because there's so many other people out there that have really good causes also. And so you have to think out of the box, as you did with this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the best part about the event is just hearing directly from the kids how excited they are. They've received their wish, and they are so eager to give back and to help grant another child's wish. And so that's why we've really started focusing on Wish Kids at the Rafting for Wishes event. And so each team has a wish buddy, and we share their wish story with them. And so it's nice to have wish families involved in it too. It definitely shows the impact of a wish when you can have the wish families involved.
Now, both of you, I know, Nikki, you've been there for a while. So
3 years last week.
Right. I remember last week it was your anniversary. Right.
Congratulations.
Yes. And Holly, how long have you been upstairs?
I just started recently, so it's about going on about 2 months. So I've been learning a lot in the past 2 months. And you mentioned earlier that you can find someone who's connected to Make-A-Wish in some way. And that's been the biggest takeaway for me so far is we all got new Make-A-Wish jackets, and I can't go anywhere without wearing this Make-A-Wish jacket and having someone approach me and say, oh, how are you connected to Make-A-Wish? Do you work there? My sister's cousin's daughter had a wish granted. So I'm finding that wherever I go, I'm meeting somebody who's been impacted by Make-A-Wish in some way.
Now, have you granted a wish yet? Or are you in the process of granting a wish?
I are actually on a wish right now. I received my wish granters training from Nikki a couple of weeks ago.
You completed it?
I completed our 3-hour training in the office with a couple of other new wish granters as well. And then Nikki and I were assigned to a child from Franklin area. And we both, went to her house, met her family, and believe it or not, her brother had a wish granted several years ago. They were both affected by the same life-threatening medical condition, and so it was neat to hear her brother's story and the wish that he had granted, and now Audrey has the chance to have her wish granted, and her parents have known for a long time that she has qualified for a wish, but they had to wait till a point in their lives when they were able to take the time to go on the wish trip that they're planning.
Now, I know we've talked about this before, but I don't think you can hear too much about it. Now, when you went, what is her first name?
Her name is Audrey. And
Audrey.
We always ask the families if they're okay with having, being out in the public and in the media, because that's definitely important. Not every family wants to be in the public or in the media's eye. So that is something that we checked with their family and they were okay with it. We can post on Facebook or talk about it on the radio. So,
okay. So let's, you know, walk us through when you, you know, get to the house and you ring the doorbell and little Audrey is standing there. Let's walk through that.
Well, to be honest, I was a little nervous because it was my first wish experience and I didn't really know what to expect. I think until you get into that situation, you don't really know. You can sit down and have the 3-hour training, but until you start experiencing, you know, the wish experience itself, you don't really know. So I was really thankful to have Nikki with me because she's a pro at this. She's done quite a few wishes. And so she kind of took the lead on it at first. And Audrey's a 16-year-old girl. So it was helpful that we were able to communicate with her fairly easily. She was a bit shy, but her mom was able to help her answering questions that we had that she felt like she couldn't answer on her own. But
it was awesome. It was, you could tell she had been thinking about this for a while because she knew she qualified for this wish for a while and just waiting for the family to be able to have the time that they could enjoy this wish experience. And she just lit up talking about it. And even her brother went in. They are actually hoping to go to the theme parks in Florida. And you could hear her brother in the room next door being like, are we going on a wish trip? And he talked about the theme parks and he was so excited to be able to go again. And when Audrey went with her brother on his wish, I think she was like 3 or 4.
She was young.
Yeah. So she was very young. So we were trying to talk about like what she hopes to do this time around, and having experience of going there myself, I was able to tell her a few things that might be related to her interests. So she was very much excited.
So you show up, you show up at their houses and give them the news. They don't know until you ring the doorbell.
So this situation was a little different because her brother had received a wish.
Yes.
So normally they know that the parents know that they qualify for a wish, and the parents will either let the child know, hey, you have wish granters coming. They're going to ask you and what your heartfelt wish might be. And they kind of talk to them a little bit about what Make-A-Wish is. But really, every situation, every family is different. And Audrey, because they had the experience of Make-A-Wish, they like already had all the answers to our questions ready to go when we got there.
They did your job for you almost.
Exactly. Huh? And I think one of the first things that you asked when we got in there, which I picked up on because I was trying to learn from the experience since it was my first one, Nikki asked something like, looked at Audrey and said, do you know why we're here? And she instantly knew. And her, like you said, her face lit up. And I think what's really neat with this wish experience is that the true heartfelt part of her wish, I think, is that she's going to have one of her best friends go with them on this trip. And they had already thought about this. And Nikki asked, oh, well, do you think her parents would be okay with that? And they said, oh, yeah, we already asked. She can take the 2 weeks. So that's definitely the heartfelt part of it for her, is to have one of her longtime best friends go with them.
Let's tell everybody what your roles are at Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. Holly Blanchard is the Director of Youth Programs, and Nikki Lyons is the Director of Community Outreach. So a very important jobs. And this granting of wishes must really bring families together in a way that you can't describe sometimes. And I guess the tissue box has to be handy sometimes, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's amazing to even Patrick, who you all have had on the show recently, his mom was at an event recently that was benefiting Make-A-Wish. And she shared her story. And even 5, 6, 8 years removed, hearing her still light up about the experience and how it truly brought their family together and was a much needed and much deserved vacation for them. It just warms your heart to hear it. So
talk to us again, because I'm, you know, when you're doing radio, you assume that people are hearing this for the first time. Not everybody is familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And you did say there's certain qualifiers, of course, to be the recipient. What would somebody who thinks they might be in a position to receive a wish granted, what would be the first thing they should do or know about?
So we can receive referrals from the doctor, child life specialist, school nurse, anyone that really knows that life-threatening medical condition. They do let the family know ahead of time that they're going to refer the child. We don't want to be reaching out to them before they know that the doctor has referred them. We can also receive a referral from the child themselves. Which every once in a while that happens, and it's really fun to take that phone call, actually, because
really?
They're so excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also hear from the parents. parents or guardians of the child, anyone that has that information. So it can be aunt and uncle or grandparent if they do have all of the information that we need, birth dates, specialist doctors, and that sort of thing. The child has to live here in New Hampshire to qualify for Make-A-Wish New Hampshire, but there are chapters across the country. They have to have not received a wish by another wish-granting organization, so we want to make sure that we're able to give them their first heartfelt wish. And they have to have a life-threatening medical condition that at the time of the referral has placed their life in jeopardy, and it's either malignant, degenerative, or progressive. So if they do, whether it's the child themselves listening or a parent or guardian or doctor, they can call our office, they can go on our website, they can email us. We take referrals any way they come. So,
what's the typical time from the first phone call to when they receive notification?
That's a hard question to answer. It all depends on the wish. A third of our wishes are actually to go to the theme parks in Florida and to visit Mickey or see the princesses or whatever it might be. And so those, depending on when they want to go. So if they reach out to us in January and they want to go on February vacation when they all have vacation days available, then obviously we can turn that around. If we have to turn a wish around, we could absolutely turn it around in a day. But I'd say about 3 to 6 months. Is kind of that time frame, but it all depends on what's perfect for the family and when we can turn it around for them.
Nikki, so you've been at it 3 years, and you've gone through many, many wish grantings, I'm sure. Looking through the website, I see pictures of kids sitting in cockpits of airplanes and kids wearing police outfits and stuff. Is there one or two that are kind of unusual or that you didn't see coming that were a little
so
crazy?
Before I got here, and this wouldn't be considered crazy, but it just absolutely warms my heart, and I'll do my best not to cry. But before I started working for Make-A-Wish, we had a young man named Garrett who actually he had lost his mobility in what he had. And he actually wished to build wheelchairs for bomb victims in Cambodia. And he continues to be involved with Make-A-Wish. He's actually going to school at the University of South Carolina, and he's created his own Wishmakers on Campus chapter, and he's raising funds and awareness for Make-A-Wish. And it was remarkable. And I actually heard that story through someone who had attended our Breakfast for Wishes that takes place in May, coming up really soon. And he was telling me how the entire audience was in tears because he got up out of his wheelchair and had been able to walk now. So.
Oh my.
Yeah, we have some remarkable kids that come through our chapter.
That brings up a really good point. I find that with organizations like yours, people that are the benefactors, sometimes, assuming the child returns to health or the person, they like to find a way to give back, as this particular gentleman did.
So I will now let Holly share what she actually does for our chapter, because it's very important, and we've known nationally across the country how important it is for this. So.
There's been a big national push through Make-A-Wish for a program called the Kids for Wish Kids program. And oftentimes, these kids are going to school with their peers who might not even realize that these kids are going through these illnesses and are having wishes granted. So the Kids for Wish Kids program gives students, whether it be elementary, middle, high school, or even at the college level, like Garrett's doing with the Wishmakers on Campus program, an opportunity to become involved with Make-A-Wish, whether it's hosting a fundraiser at their school or helping out one of their fellow peers who's going through a life-threatening illness. And it's really exciting for me because I've always felt passionate about giving back. And it's really inspiring when you have young kids. We have a former Wish recipient who was 4 years old, I believe, when she had her wish granted, and she had her own lemonade stand that she raised funds for through that way. So these kids, after having their wishes granted, feel compelled to give back so that they can help other kids who are going through exactly what they went through. And it really is inspiring.
It is very inspiring. My goodness. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Food for Thought. We are live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street. We are in studio with Holly and Nikki of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. We need to go on a short break. And when we come back, listeners, you can stay tuned, and we'll go over again. You know, if you are thinking that you have some time and you'd like to, you know, volunteer for Make-A-Wish, we'll give you that information when we come back. We'll be right back.
For Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, and we are in studio with Holly and Nikki of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. And So welcome.
Thanks. Thank you.
So when we before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, for those listeners that are listening and would like to, you know, give back and do something, and how can people do that?
So we encourage anyone that's interested in volunteering to attend a wish tour, just so that they can learn a little bit more about our chapter before they get started, to see if their hopes and goals match what we're looking for as well. And we want them to learn a little bit more about Make-A-Wish too. And so they can attend a wish tour or reach out to us, and we'll invite them to do that. We have wish granting volunteer opportunities. We have office volunteer opportunities, third-party external event volunteer opportunities. And if they are a student and want to help with Kids for Wish Kids or Wishmakers on Campus, we do have that as well. And of course, we have board members and other things where they can help, but they can just reach out to us, go on our website, and all the information's there, and that's nh.wish.org.
All right.
I heard you mention, Nikki, a few moments ago about a breakfast that's coming up in May. So how does one get to go to that?
So, again, we encourage everyone to attend the Wish Tour, and that's so they can learn a little bit more about what we do, because we don't want, it's okay if it is, but we'd love to have people attend the Wish Tour so they learn a little bit more about Make-A-Wish before they attend the Breakfast for Wishes. But it happens May 7th at, there's networking and social opportunities where they get to meet some of our Wish Ambassadors, our Wish Kid Ambassadors, between 7 and 7:30, but the breakfast starts right at 7:30, and it will take place at the Radisson at 700 Elm Street this year, and it'll only be 1 hour, so we'll have you out of there in time to get to work. And it's an amazing and empowering breakfast, and this year our theme is the impact of a wish, and we're really hoping to portray that to everyone that attends, just how powerful and what the wish the impact that the wish has on not just the family but the entire community that's involved. So
the challenge of raising enough money, I mean, that's always, the Rafting for Wishes, or I got the name wrong, but you do a lot of events. You've got the bowling event with Greg Kretschmar and Rock 101, and so you got to stay ahead of the game. And how do you reach out for money? I mean, if somebody's listening right now and said, I would just love to be a part of that, I'm sure a donation would be appreciated.
Absolutely. I mean, people are still able to send a check in by mail and donate to us that way. They can do it online. They can attach it. So we're lucky enough to have over 300 external events that take place throughout the year. And we just do our best to manage those relationships and work with all of our amazing supporters across the state. And we do our best to share wish stories as much as we can with them and keep them inspired, because we are so lucky to have them. And our external events are definitely what keeps us attached to the New Hampshire community, because it's people putting on something, an event for us to benefit us. And so it's someone that's passionate about our mission. And then we get to go there and bring Wish Kids there to share their story. So yes, you can absolutely donate to us any way that you'd like, whether it's electronically or sending in a check, or if you want to learn more about us and maybe join our society, we have that opportunity as well. And a society member, we do have people that donate $1,000, $5,000, or $10,000 a year for 5 years and promise that, you know what, I want to bring hope, strength, and joy to a wish child myself. So,
and as we mentioned earlier, that there are students who like to get involved as well. And I recently attended a spaghetti dinner at Salem High School. The Key Club at Salem High hosted an event, and they've been doing it for about 10 years or so to raise money and benefit Make-A-Wish. And that was really my first experience as a new employee with the office and the team at Make-A-Wish to watch it happen and watch these students get up on stage and talk about why they want to give back to Make-A-Wish specifically. And we had Patrick, a former Wish recipient, on air a couple of weeks ago with you guys. And he and his family attended the spaghetti dinner with me and a couple of other families as well. And they got to get up on stage and share their stories. And it really personalizes it for the audience, so that they can hear firsthand the experience that these kids have gone through. Because, as we might have mentioned before, these kids are facing life-threatening illnesses that they're adult battles, and these kids don't even realize what's happening to them. And so to be able to grant them a wish is almost needed.
It definitely is. Well, you know, and I do have to say, you know, all the employees up there, like, when you know, when I went on the tour and you know, getting to know you guys better, the you know, over these past few weeks, you are all just so passionate about what you do. I mean, it just exudes from you. It's, you know, and, you know, it must be like a really fun place to work up there.
It's pretty amazing. And it's funny because so we're both volunteer wish granters, which is how we're on Audrey's Wish. And everyone in the office is actually a volunteer as well. And it's amazing because I started wish granting. I thought that I was going to change a child's life or that I was going to grant the child's heartfelt wish. But who knew that it'd be changing my life in return? And I've been blown away by the passion and excitement that all of our wish kids have. It's a pretty remarkable position to be in.
It is. Well, thank you very much for another great segment with Make-A-Wish New Hampshire. And they'll be back next week. I believe Julie will be back next week. And what do we have coming up tomorrow, Mike?
Well, I'm glad you asked here as we're rounding up the last couple moments of the show. Tomorrow we are going to be talking to, I think, one of the most fun people in food today.
I'm excited.
Una Williams. Have you met Una?
I have not, but I've seen her.
Yeah, I've seen her on Cook's Corner. She is an expert on gluten-free. She's bringing us some deliciously decadent food that I think involves chocolate, but will be gluten-free.
So I won't eat lunch tomorrow.
No, or the next day.
Can we come downstairs?
Una, you just heard the request, the shout-out from Nikki and Holly. All right, so we'll talk to Una about 12:20 or so. And then a segment I'm looking forward to. I've only heard the recorded version, but tomorrow on the phone from Delaware, is it?
Delaware. Donna from Delaware.
Donna's delight. She's a character, isn't she?
She is. Oh, is she ever.
What does she, just go off in whatever tangent she wants? Or
sort of, kind of, yes. Yeah? I met her in Grand Cayman, Daryl and I, her and her husband. And, you know, they have like this opening party at this resort that we go to. And she was just so wild, like really wild. And when we got to know them, she's a foodie. I thought she'd be a great fit.
When you meet a good personality, you like to put them to work.
Exactly.
So that's what we'll do tomorrow.
Exactly.
The topic is food. And Chef Patrick Hall, Lakes Regional...
The Culinary Arts Director for Lakes Region Community College.
Community College. Thank
you very much. At Shaker Village.
Yes.
Very interesting.
So we got a big variety and lots of fun again tomorrow, starting at just after the noon news.
Very good. All right. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye. And thank you, Holly and Nikki. Thank you.
Thank you.